You may be turning in your Bibles to Daniel chapter 2. As you can tell, my voice is just about all the way back, so I'm definitely thankful for that, but I will still welcome any comments and questions and participation that anyone would like to add to our Bible class this morning. I find it enriching to hear perspectives and comments, and I very much appreciate the participation of those who are willing to add their thoughts or make application to the things that we're looking at. I believe that enriches our study together. And that's what we're here this morning trying to accomplish, is not just listening to me, but a mutual study of God's Word. So I very much appreciate the input on all of those who share with us their comments and their questions. So if you're there in Daniel chapter 2, we're going to be looking at verses 14 through 23 this week. We'll see how much of that we can cover. I'm going to ask Paul, if he will, to read that text for us in preparation of our study. Okay. The portion of text we're going to be studying from this morning, remember we're following up verses 1 through 13. You've got Nebuchadnezzar who had this dream and he can't remember what it is, or he doesn't want to remember what it is, and he calls these wise men and asks for them to bring to him the interpretation, both the dream and the interpretation. In a nutshell, they're unable to do so. And they say only the gods whose dwelling is not with men are capable of making known to the king both this dream and its interpretation. And in a fit of rage, Nebuchadnezzar sends out a decree that all of the wise men, the Chaldeans, the astrologers, anyone who had anything to do with the interpretation of dreams or that was in touch with the divine, claiming to be in touch with the divine, was to be put to death. And that's where we picked up our reading in verse 14, where we find that the decree that the king made was being enacted. And we're introduced in verse 14 to the captain of the guard, whose name is Arioch. Now, you may remember the names that were given to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those were their Babylonian names, not their Jewish names. But when they were brought over into Babylon, they were given these new names. And Arioch's is somewhat similar to Shadrach's, as is its meaning. Shadrach's name and both Arioch's name is interpreted as the servant of Aku. And Aku was one of the Babylonian deities. He was, in particular, the moon god. So you've got here this man who's proved himself loyal to King Nebuchadnezzar. He's worked himself up into the point where he is the chief of the king's guard, the king's elite soldiers. He's the one who is tasked with this responsibility to go out and to kill all of the wise men. Now we find here the captain of the guard. What kind of man do you think Nebuchadnezzar would put in such a position? Somebody follow orders? Okay, powerful, strict, a hard man, probably not real compassionate, not real kind. I mean, and you look at this particular order he was given to go and to cut down all of these wise men of Babylon, he goes without a second thought and begins to do just that. And so, whatever kind of man he was willing to receive this command and just to start acting upon it. And think of the situation Daniel finds himself in. And the high pressure and the intensity of it whenever his door bursts open in the middle of the night and this man comes in with a sword on the verge of taking his life. How hard is it in the times that we live and sometimes the frustrations and circumstances that we face, keeping your head and your wits about you and your cool in a very intense situation, a very volatile situation? And I'm really impressed with what Daniel's able to do here. It doesn't take just a whole lot sometimes to frazzle us and to cause us to just lose our wits. But we see Daniel's response to Arioch, who came in the middle of the night, probably disrupting their sleep, on the verge of taking his life, that Daniel is able to stay this man's hand. And we're told in verse 14 that it was with counsel and wisdom that Daniel answered Arioch, who was the one that was given to take this command to take their life. Now, this word wisdom here, it's related to our word taste. Daniel's wisdom, as we're going to see frequently throughout the book, and as we've seen earlier back in chapter 1 in his dealings with the chief of eunuchs, Daniel was someone who was wise, and wisdom is, in relation to Daniel, related to the word taste. That is, Daniel had a very highly developed sense of spiritual taste, you might say. Now, taste in the world that we live in is a sense that you can develop to a very high degree. There are people that can taste a wine, and they can tell you what year it was, they can tell you what ingredients are in it, they can tell you what kind of material it was being stored in, for that matter. Someone perhaps can, on these cooking shows, they're able to talk about the very specific way the food was cooked and the ingredients that were involved in the cooking. Taste is something that we can develop to a very strong degree. And I say that because you see the correlation between taste and wisdom that Daniel's demonstrating here. Daniel is demonstrating a very refined degree of spiritual taste, of spiritual wisdom. And in answering this man, in answering Arioch, as he comes and prepares to take these men's life, as was the king's command, we see that he's able to stay his hand. So, the wisdom, I'm sure, not only the words that Daniel used, but also the way in which we say things. And we can understand that it's not just sometimes what we say, but it's how we say it. And how we say it sometimes has more to do with someone's response than our actual words that we use in responding to them. So, this man comes in the middle of the night, prepared to kill the wise men, and Daniel is able to stop, and he answers Arioch with wisdom and with counsel. And you go on and you read in the next verse, and he goes on to ask the question to Arioch, why is the decree from the king so urgent? And then Arioch made the decision known to Daniel. So Nebuchadnezzar goes into this fit of rage and this fit of anger when the Chaldeans were unable to tell him his dream and its interpretation. It's a real erratic decision. And I think it's a good reflection of the personality that the king has overall. And I think we're going to see him demonstrate this character flaw time and time again as we continue studying about Daniel. But these particular wise men aren't able to tell him the meaning of his dream. And so in a fit of rage, he says, you know what? You're going to die, but not only you, all of the other wise men and all of the other Chaldeans and all of the other astrologers, they're going to die too. Even though they weren't directly involved in the failure of these particular wise men, he says, you know what? Let's just get rid of all of them. What do you think it was that stilled this man's sword? Arioch, who comes in prepared to kill Daniel and his friends, what was it that caused him to hesitate, do you think? And maybe that's a bit of an opinion question, but I'd be interested to hear your thoughts. What was it that caused Arioch to hold his sword long enough to have a conversation? Tommy? Okay. 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 Right. I kind of have to wonder, if you go back and look at the first verse or first chapter, we're told that God gave Daniel favor in the eyes of his overseers. And I wonder if maybe that was the case here, that maybe Arioch had somehow come to know Daniel in some degree, or that maybe that God had brought him into favor of this man here that caused him to hesitate, that allowed Daniel to have this brief conversation with him rather than just going in and just slaughtering him like he slaughtered all of the other, or many of the other wise men. Any other thoughts on that? Okay. Okay. Good point, you know. In the middle of the night, Daniel might have just blurted out, you know, what are you doing in here waking me up? But it says, with discretion, with wisdom, with counsel, he answered Arioch. And so it wasn't just his request and his desire to find out why is the king's decree so urgent, but the way in which he made this. And, you know, I think that that's exactly right, what I would say. Probably more than anything, what stayed his sword was the fact, the manner in which Daniel spoke to him. Brother Walker? You don't think it was at night? Well, you look. Okay. Yeah, I guess as I read it, kind of the situation I saw is that he's got this dream and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him, meaning he was trying to go to sleep or go back to sleep after being awakened by the dream, but he was unable to. That was just my understanding. And if you'll remember the kind of setup and the organization of King Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, he was there in his palace, but within his palace was many of his guard, was his administrative staff, so it wouldn't have been any problem for him to wake up, unable to go back to sleep, want to know the meaning of this dream, and you kind of see urgency with Nebuchadnezzar. And, you know, Brother Barker's right, it's not a foregone conclusion that it was in the middle of the night that all of this transpired. It may have very well been that Nebuchadnezzar had this dream, was unable to go back to sleep, and so first thing the next morning, he called for the wise men. And so it very well could have been during the day, but I guess I see Nebuchadnezzar's urgency in dealing with this, and I just always assume that because of this, it probably was at night. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yet for some reason or another, and as Tommy pointed out, primarily, this was God's will. And this was going to happen the way that God wanted it to happen. And so according to providence, through Daniel's wisdom perhaps, and the way that he answers this man, he's able to spare his life long enough to have this conversation. And going back to that, I think probably the way Daniel said what he said more than anything, you read, go over to the book of James, and what does James tell us about the tongue? It's very powerful. Power of death is in the tongue, right? Well, as much as the power of death is in the tongue, I think in this particular passage, we see the power of life in the tongue, because Arioch's coming to kill Daniel and his friends, and with Daniel's response to him, and the way that he responds to him, saved Daniel's life. Perhaps and that's through the wisdom that God gave him, God was involved in that, but Daniel's response, I believe, saved his life. Growing up, I remember a passage my mom made me and my brothers memorize, and it wasn't because we ever fought or anything like that, but a soft answer turns away wrath. That's Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 1. And I think you see that here with Arioch and with Daniel, that Daniel's response to this probably violent and urgent message to go and to destroy all these wise men allows him to have this conversation. It causes Arioch's sword to be stopped. And he asks, well, why is the king's decree so urgent? Why is this happening all of a sudden? Nebuchadnezzar had this dream, and he called for the Chaldeans. And when they're unable to produce this, Daniel and them haven't probably heard about the Chaldeans in the palace and their failed attempt. So he's saying, what's going on? What caused the king to make the decree so urgent? And this conversation is had. And we see then that Daniel goes in, or it says Daniel went in and asked the king to give him time that he might tell the king the interpretation. There are some various interpretations to this particular passage here. Historically, we understand that there was somewhat of a protocol that was to be followed whenever someone entered into the presence of the king. Can you remember any instances in the Bible where that protocol took place? Okay, Queen Esther. And that was her whole deal about not wanting to go before King Ahasuerus, because if she went and she wasn't summoned, she could end up dying. But if the king held out his scepter toward her, then she would be permitted to stay and make the request that she made. So there was some sort of protocol in going in before the presence of the king. Now, verse 16 says that Daniel went in and asked the king to give him more time. You know, as I read that, kind of what jumps out at me initially is, well, Daniel just wants to have been there after speaking to Arioch and saying, I think that I can probably shed some light on what he's wanting to know, that he therefore goes and he stands before the king. But like I said, this is somewhat of a challenging passage. And if you look at verses 24 and 25, Some scholars have suggested that Daniel, in verse 16, didn't make an actual appearance before the king, because you go and you read 24 and 25, and it's like Arioch, that chief of the guard, escorts him in to stand before Nebuchadnezzar whenever they have the formal conversation about the dream and about its interpretation. So it could mean a couple of things. And if you go back to the original, we don't really want to linger on this because it's not that significant. The point is that the news was given to Nebuchadnezzar that there was a wise man that can interpret the dream. But the original language doesn't indicate that Daniel had to go and stand before the king and have this conversation. Rather, it's possible that Daniel went to the palace and that word was given to the king, that Daniel came and Daniel was able to give some interpretation of this dream. Or very well may be that protocol was followed, that Daniel did go and did speak to the king and did say, I can give you an interpretation if you give me a little bit of time. Either one of those is a possibility, and it's not really relevant as to how it happened. But word was given to the king. Daniel went to the palace. Word was given to the king that Daniel could interpret this dream. And Daniel was given time that he might tell the king its interpretation. Any thoughts on why Daniel, unlike the other wise men, might be given time to do this? Because Nebuchadnezzar said, you know, if I give you time, what you're going to do is you're going to plot against me, and you're going to make up these lying words until the time passes. So he didn't give them any time. He demanded the response immediately. Why do you think Daniel might have been given the time to find that interpretation? Okay. 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 Good point. And remember, at the end of the chapter, he goes and he stands before Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar, it said, interviewed him. So he probably would have had some remembrance of those Jews that came in and were so much more wise and knew so much more than his own advisors that had been serving him for years. I'm sure that left an impression on him. And so whenever young Daniel comes and says, you know, I can tell you if you give me a little bit of time, he would probably remember. And therefore says, okay, you know, nobody else has been able to do anything. If there's a shot that this guy's able to tell me, you know, we'll give him a chance, give him a little bit of time. Otherwise, we can just kill him later. What's to lose? Paul?
I guess I look to the providence of God.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And they had already told the king, only a God could answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then Daniel comes in and says, well, my God has given me this answer.
Right.
It's like, yeah, a God can answer this, and only this God can answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, so when he was already told by the other ones that, no, we can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's
what the other ones were saying. And they said, you know, we can't tell you the king, only the gods can, like Paul said. But Daniel comes in and says, no, I can give you the dream and I can give you his interpretation. And he's going to bring God in. I think that that's God's providence, as it was with Joseph. Daniel, a servant of Jehovah God, is going to be elevated in the eyes of the king, the most powerful king in the world at this time, just as Joseph, 1,000 years ago, was elevated in the eyes of Pharaoh. And not only Joseph, but in affiliation with Joseph, was the God that Joseph served. So both God and both Joseph are going to be elevated in this Babylonian culture. And Jehovah God is going to show himself above all of the other gods. And we're going to see Daniel letting Nebuchadnezzar know under no uncertain terms that it isn't he. Just like his wise men said, they were right when they said only the gods can tell you what that is. But Daniel isn't going to take credit for that himself. He's going to give credit to God. So he goes in, he is granted time by King Nebuchadnezzar because he says that he can give an interpretation. And we're going to see his response after being granted this extra time. Johnny. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. That's true. So Daniel's response kind of steals Arioch's sword, and it steals the command from Nebuchadnezzar. He says, okay, we've got a guy that might be able to give us an interpretation. Let's slow down just a minute and take a step back. So once again, God, through Daniel, has saved not only the life of these four young Jews, but also many of the other wise men in the kingdom. Brother Barker? Okay. Right. Johnny? He vouches for him, doesn't he? So. That's true. So you got to wonder what other exchange went on between them.
Mm-hmm. More likely it wasn't a one night dream, is because he is obviously asleep at break from him.
Mm-hmm.
I take that to mean that he was not getting any sleep at night. And this probably went on for a period of time. More likely it went on for a longer period of time than just maybe one night. Plus calling in all of the people he called in, most of those people were probably not just immediately available in the court around the palace.
There, well, I think their call, they were at the beck and call of the king. Possibly. It's possible that he kept his right. That's true. We can speculate, and ultimately, speculation doesn't come down to a lot as long as we take away the primary lesson. You see God's involvement here with Daniel. And you see the situation as it transpires, all of this going to point to the interpretation of the vision, which is the climax of this chapter.
God is definitely involved in
all this. And so whether it happened in a night or whether it happened in a week, we don't know, and it really doesn't matter, because God's going to make known the dream, and that's the point that we need, don't want to lose in the midst of all of this. Any other thoughts or questions on this verse? Okay. So... thanks for bringing that out. Yeah, we're going to get to that. And he's going to go, and the revelation he receives from God, we're told, unlike Nebuchadnezzar's, which was a dream, it's called a night vision. So we'll talk a little bit about that, see if there's any distinction between those two things when we get over there. But yes, he did receive that in the night as well. So however you want to take that, whether it was all at once or just succession of days, and both of those interpretations come in at night, you see God's involvement in both the life of Nebuchadnezzar and of Daniel as well. Okay. Verse 17, go on to that. Daniel then, and this is after Daniel was given this little bit of extra time. Daniel went to his house and made the decision known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they may seek the mercies from the God of heaven concerning the secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. I really appreciate Daniel's faith that he's demonstrated throughout the book up to this point, and even now, and the faith that he's going to continue to demonstrate. I'm very impressed with Daniel as I've studied through this, and I always have had a lot of respect and a lot of admiration, and thought the example of Daniel in this book is that of a very fine young man. But as we delve into the text and we look at it as closely as we're doing in this study, I really have a great appreciation for what Daniel is doing and the tremendous amount of faith that he's demonstrating here. We've had the privilege of reading the book of Daniel, and we know the story. We know how it goes. We know what's going to happen, and we know how it's going to end. But Daniel was living in the moment, so he didn't have the benefit of knowing what was going to occur. And so his door is open, and this man comes in preparation to take his life, as the king has commanded all of the wise men to die. This is what Daniel's seen. And Daniel has the wisdom and the discretion to engage this man in conversation. It calls him to hold his sword and one way or another, get a message to the king that he's able to give an interpretation of this dream. Not only the interpretation, but he's able to tell the king what the dream meant, which none of the other wise men were able to do. And that's what they were being put to death for. You know, all of this is happening under threat of death. And if one straw falls and breaks the camel's back, then Daniel's life is gone. Where is the confidence that Daniel is going to be able to do what none of the other wise men in Babylon were able to do? You know, we don't see recorded for us God coming to Daniel and saying, you know, King Nebuchadnezzar's had a dream. I'm going to tell you both the dream and the interpretation. We don't have an account that tells us that Daniel had any past experience with dream interpretation that was divine in nature. So he wasn't forewarned by God that all of this was going to happen. Daniel is completely walking by faith here. When he says to Arioch and when he says to the king, I can tell you what the dream was, and I can tell you what its interpretation is, he wasn't told that he was going to receive that. And it causes me to wonder, where did Daniel's faith come from? Such great faith that God was going to tell him what the dream was and what it meant. Whenever there's nothing in his life that would happen that might give him confidence that that was going to be the case. But I think the answer is the same way it is for us today. That Daniel and his friends had been raised by Jewish parents and they'd been taught about the history of the Jews. And they would have been taught, as Daniel's going to later refer to it, as the God of my fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Daniel was taught about the God of his fathers. What's recorded for us in the book of Genesis through Deuteronomy and the going on of God and the raising of the Jewish nation and God's involvement in raising them up and releasing them from Egypt and giving them the law. Daniel was instructed by his parents of these things. And no doubt he would have recalled of a situation where there was another young man who was in a similar situation, far away from home, in a place where he wasn't surrounded by family and friends, and he finds himself in a similar dilemma. And God revealed the dream of Pharaoh to Joseph, and you know he has to be thinking, well, I see how God's dealt with his people who were faithful in the past. I'm going to put my faith, and I'm going to put my confidence, and I'm going to put my trust in God. And perhaps God will do for me, just as he did for faithful Joseph, that is, that he will reveal to me this dream. We see that God reveals it to him, but Daniel's not given any promise or any inclination that God's going to reveal the dream, but yet he says with confidence before the king, I can tell you what it means, and I can tell you what the dream was. And all of that to say, the faith that Daniel had to make that statement is pointed back to what he was told when he was a young man. That is, the instruction that he received of his nation's history and God's involvement with his people. That is, the workings of the God of the Old Testament. And such is the source of faith for us as well today. Faith comes by hearing, Romans 10:17. Faith comes by hearing and hearing by the Word of God. What gave Daniel faith that God was going to tell him this dream and his interpretation was faith. And that is the things that he was told. And he had that faith because of God's Word, which was told to him by his parents. And so we see here in the situation that time is short. The king showed that he's erratic and that he's impatient and that he wants to know what this meaning was. And so the first thing that you might expect him to do is to go back and talk to his friends, as we see him doing, and tell them what's going to happen. And since they were wise like he was wise, maybe they could sit down and figure out a solution to this problem that they're dealing with. But as he goes back to his friends, that's not the kind of man Daniel is. He's not looking for a humanistic answer to this problem that he's dealing with. What he wants with his friends and what he requests of his friends is prayer, that God might reveal to them the meaning of the dream, because he realizes that this is completely and utterly out of his hands. And so while it isn't their wisdom and their help he seeks, what it is he seeks from them is their prayers. And so if there aren't any other comments, we'll pick up, not next week, because that'll be the start of our gospel meeting, we'll pick up the week after next, in verse 18. Does anyone want to add anything before we bring our Bible class to a close?